Hey everybody, welcome back. Thank you for joining us here in the second hour in the members section. We're talking with Arthur Topham from radicalpress.com, and we have much more to discuss, much more to get into here. I want to ask you more about the case as well, Arthur, but what do you think the solution to something like this is? Because I get an urgent feeling that not only do people need to support you, they need to get louder about this as well. More people need to write about these issues. They need to show that they won't be bullied into submission or silenced. I mean, we have a long-standing tradition of freedom of speech in the West, and it's horrible to see it go out the window in this capacity. We have the same thing happening in Sweden, as you said before, many other European countries as well. And this was being we're being inhibited by this pressure, basically, and some people are caving into it. But at the same time, what you mentioned is that there's a lot more of this, you know, people who dare to do this online. They're not afraid to talk about this and to, you know, put criticism where they see criticism is way overdue and what have you. But what's your answer to some of the solutions to this? I mean, I guess if the case would turn out in a good way, that would be very favorable, and that would indeed, you know, change things in some capacity. But what do you see as a solution to this, Arthur?
Well, like you say, it's a problem everywhere, and it's basically the same problem, and it was created by the same group of people who, you know, have such an inordinate amount of power and influence, you know, in the world of politics and industry and media today, and it's not going to go away until, you know, people finally realize, first and foremost, what the problem is, you know, and that's the biggest, that's one of the biggest problems. It's kind of a, you know, sort of a catch-22 situation that we're in. But I know from, let's even going back to 2007, when I was first charged with the Section 13(1) so-called hate crime, that over the last 8 years, the numbers of people who are speaking out on those same issues that I was talking about, issues to do with, you know, the treatment of the Palestinians, you know, by the Israelis, issues to do with international banking, issues to do with, you know, everything from, you know, 9/11 and on. These things, they're just exploding on the internet, you know.
Yeah.
And more websites, more blogs are appearing almost daily now. And the key is just to keep on pounding away at the truth of what's going on, you know, and for more people, you know, to keep speaking out and keep speaking out. You know, I've seen it. I've seen people, you know, I've been associated with people in the alternative news business now, you know, for going on 15, 16 years. I've seen changes in, you know, and I've had people writing for radicalpress.com, you know, for the last 15, 16 years. And I've seen a progression in their thinking and in their awareness. You know, and it keeps on expanding and growing, and they're speaking out more and more. And these people, you know, these writers and bloggers are basically, you know, they're the they're kind of the apostles, you know, of you know, trying to get people to you know, hearken back to the fact that, you know, without freedom of expression, you know, we're all hooped. And, you know, we're never going to change the horrendous situations that the world is facing now. And so my case is one that basically is an could be, you know, an example for other people to show, you know, that, yes, you can stand up to these types of pressures and this, you know, with support and with, you know, if you get the help and support of others, you know, and I do have good legal representation at this point in time. And like I said earlier, you know, the case brought against me is so flimsy and based on such, you know, sort of puerile examples of what the lobby calls hatred, that it should be possible, you know, to defeat it. And I think at this point in time, it's probably appropriate to mention the fact that just in the last couple of months, I've received the support here in Canada from a major civil liberties association out of Ontario called the Ontario Civil Liberties Association, who decided that they were going to support my case. And they issued an online petition in which they sent a petition to the British Columbia Attorney General. And it was in this is something I didn't mention earlier, but in order for the criminal code provisions, there's a provision in the criminal code with respect to all these so-called hate crimes that you cannot be charged unless the Attorney General in the province that you're living signs off on it. The police have to get the consent of the Attorney General's office in order to charge a person with a so-called Section 319(2) hate crime charge. And so what the Ontario Civil Liberties Association did was they wrote a letter and basically put up a petition online asking the Honorable Suzanne Anton, who is British Columbia's Attorney General here under the Liberal government, to retract her consent for the criminal proceedings against myself. And that has been online now for a couple of months, and we've gotten so far around 1,200 signatures on that petition, and I'm hoping that I can promote it further here by asking other people, you know, who may be listening in to check that that out and possibly go on and sign. And it's not just for Canadians themselves, but
right.
It's for anybody concerned with this issue of freedom of expression, be it wherever. And a lot of the signatures and the comments on that petition right now come from around the world, from South America, from Australia, from the Middle East, from Europe, from United States, Canada, Britain. There's commentaries coming from all over, and the theme the type of comment is basically all the same. People are just stressing the fact that how vital it is, you know, that we have the right to freedom of expression.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, it's a good indication of just how lively and how prominent this issue is for people everywhere, not just, like you say, not just here in Canada.
Absolutely. Tell us where to find that on your website right now, so people know where to go if they want to sign that petition.
It's not really... Well, I mean, it is on my website, and I honestly can't... one would have to scroll down to find the article itself, but it's if they were just to Google the Ontario Civil Liberties Association... That is, they're the ones that created the petition, and it's on their website itself.
All right, definitely. So yeah, I was going to try to find
where they would find it if they Googled Ontario Civil Liberties Association, or even if they Googled, Arthur Topham, Ontario Civil Liberties Association petition, something like that. I don't actually, you know, the Earl is a half a mile long, I think. And
yeah, actually, I have it right here. I can actually, I'll just let our listeners know that I'll link this up. It's on change.org. That's the main website.
That's right. That's who's hosting it. That's right. But that was a major breakthrough for my case, you know, because You know, after I was charged in 2012, of course, soon as the indictment was handed down, the mainstream media here in Canada, which is basically 98% controlled by the Zionists, all the major newspapers and all the major television outlets and so on, they all came out and, you know, pronounced me a hate monger and an anti-Semite and a racist and and all the rest of it, like they normally do whenever somebody is charged with one of these so-called hate crimes. And after they've defamed you and belittled you and so on and so forth, then they just hit the switch, and of course there's no recourse for you to respond in any way. They never call you up for your side of the story. You know, they just repeat whatever it is that you know, that they wish to, in order to, you know, set you up for, you know, for the show trials that they hope will ensue later on. So your case just sort of becomes, you know, goes dead and goes black and silent, and that's it. And you're left to try to promote your story on the internet, which I've been fairly successful in doing over the years, because it's been, like I say, close to 8 years now that this issue has been going on. But suddenly, the Ontario Civil Liberties Association picked up on the case and decided that they were going to support me. And that has been a major breakthrough here in Canada anyways. And I'm hopeful that in the near future, other provincial civil liberties associations and possibly even the Canadian Civil Liberties Association will join in, you know, and lend their support to this case, because it truly is important to all Canadians, you know.
Well, definitely, exactly. And again, well, I'll make sure to... you know, mention again the petition and have the linked up on this program page for Arthur Topham. So just go down in the links and check it right there, and then please go in and sign that and add a comment there if you want to as well. But what's interesting here is that a lot of people know about the stupidity and the agenda and inaccuracies in mainstream media, and yet at the same time people are some cases, and I'm not talking about this crowd or the alternative necessarily, but not always, are they smart enough to see through that it's a complete, you know, plan by these media outlets to do these kinds of, you know, character assassinations and completely go after, you know, you and other people in this way of trying to ruin them or their personal life. And there's just a number of these stories, and I'm really glad to see that there are more people not only becoming smart to this, but actually finding different modalities of actually, you know, countering some of these attacks. And as you said, with the web, people can, you know, finally publish their own story. And for those who actually are true journalists and reporters, they can go out there and they can contact people like yourself to get not only the other side of the story, but in this case, the right side of the story. So that's an encouragement. But it's going to take a lot to break that media stranglehold that they still have, you know?
Oh, it will. But, you know, from what I've, the expansion in, you know, over the last 5-6 years it has truly been phenomenal, you know. And if it continues this way, you know, it's like every year now is you're seeing advances, you know, that prior to that maybe took 5 years, you know, for to and of course we've been greatly assisted, you know, in a negative way by the behavior of Israel over the past summer there, you know, with all the slaughter and bloodletting going on in Gaza.
Yeah.
You know, things like that, you know, they just, you know, they unfortunately wake people up, but it would be nice if people could wake up without them having to commit these god-awful crimes against innocent people, you know, in order for to realize that, you know, there's something wrong over there. You know, there's something wrong with a nation that will go in and you know, and bomb and kill innocent people, you know, by the thousands, you know, based on nothing, based on just lies and premises, and, you know, and then on top of that, governments like the government of Canada, and of course just about every other Western government, who will stand by and stand with Israel, regardless of what they do, eh? And,
yeah.
And it's absolutely shameful.
Yeah.
Which kind of reminds me of the fact that I just recently heard that Sweden has recognized the Israel.
Palestine.
Is that true?
They've recognized Palestine, yes.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. Palestine,
yeah.
And that's a major breakthrough, even if you're dealing with the same issues. I couldn't possibly imagine Harper and the conservative governments here doing something like that.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, so I'm hopeful that that Sweden is going to set a precedent here as well, too.
I hope so, and I just a part of me is kind of reeling and just wishing that this is not extended further, because as we've seen before with people like, you know, Barbara Spector and whatnot, who are actively seeking to destroy the what used to be a homogenous ethnicity of Sweden, that it's become a kind of a war with population displacement and immigration, and then of course you have, you know, issues of a lot of wars in the Middle East that are creating a lot of migrants, of course. But we've had people quite openly now, you know, from the Zionist branches of things, talking about how, you know, Sweden has to become multicultural, and it's a kind of a fight against the Swedish people. And we had a recent, actually, thing taking place in Norway where one of the Association of Racism or whatever, I forget the exact term of what this organization was, but the gentleman happened to be Jewish, but he talked about how Norwegians are living in a country that is too white, and it's their job and their task, a big task, he said, to bring in as many immigrants as possible. So there is this kind of tug of war going on to a certain extent, and there is a kind of one application of standards set for Israel, and then there is another set of applications set for Sweden. So I just hope now when Sweden has recognized Palestine, that there won't be any kind of you know, hostility even further put towards Sweden. That's a real possibility, though, I think.
Well, yes, given what happened in Norway there a year or two ago, I just hope, too, and pray that you know, there's no sort of, you know, blowback and some, you know, some other crime committed, you know, to sort of, you know, out of vengeance, you know, for having done, you know, having taken that step forward. But it's so blatant, you know, this double standard you know, when it comes to Israel, it's a Jews-only state for Jews, and that's it. And yet it's the Jews throughout the rest of the world who wanna water down and, you know, and turn every other culture into basically a melting pot of everyone, you know.
Yeah.
It's just so hypocritical.
It
you
is.
Know? And,
it is.
People have to wake up to that fact, you know.
Exactly. No, well, that's the major elephant in the room here, and really the aspect of, you know, the double standards and other people basically telling what other nations should or shouldn't do. It says quite a bit about how the power in these countries have shifted and whatnot. But kind of bridging on from that type of issue. Are European Canadians protected under the same hate speech laws as, you know, in the same way as some of the minorities are? And I guess in some cases we could say so-called minorities, because on a global stage, these are actually majorities. But nonetheless, in Sweden, again, to go back to that, the native Swedish people do not have the same rights and level of protection that immigrants and minorities has when it comes to hate speech laws. Is it the same in Canada? Do you know?
I believe it is. I believe it is, and that would even extend to the original First Nations people here in Canada. I mean, you know, they've been subjected to, you know, probably over the last, well, ever since Canada was colonized, they probably have been subjected to more hate literature or hate speech or whatever than anybody else. But it appears to be, you know, and it's evident from my research anyways that the hate speech laws, especially here in Canada, and they started working on these laws, in some cases even even prior to the Second World War, but after the end of the war and after they started creating the whole Holocaust myth, by the mid 50s, the Jewish lobbyist groups here in Canada were already working on the federal government, trying to introduce these types of hate crime legislation, and they were specifically designed, and the arguments in favor of them were all based on the myth of the Holocaust and the so-called genocide of of 6 million Jews. So and they just continued to lobby and continued to lobby until they finally, you know, by the mid 60s, the government of that day created a royal commission, basically, which was headed by a Jew by the name of Cohen, and the commission became known as the Cohen Commission, and its recommendations were the ones that eventually turned into Section 318 to 320, which is the ones that are in the criminal code now that are being used against myself. And right throughout the whole period from the 1950s right up to today, all of the legislation, if you look at it and you study it, the major, major player throughout are the Jewish lobbyists. So it's fairly evident that they are the ones, you know, that were concerned in creating it for their own benefit. There was never any other group in Canada, be they East Indians or Chinese or Asian or, Muslim people or European people for that matter. No one, we had legislation prior to that, that dealt with, defamation and stuff like that, and of course inciting violence and things. We already had that type of legislation in place. There was no need for it. It had to be created, and of course it was created by the Zionist Jew lobby groups here in Canada. So it was designed for only them, and they are the only beneficiaries of it, and always have been. And even in the case, recent cases here where, and these are going back to the Section 13-1, where when everybody was being charged with those, and of course, out of the, I believe there was 37 cases here in Canada of people who were charged by the Canadian Human Rights Commission with these hate crime charges, and all cases they were whites, and in all cases, 100% conviction rate was how it turned out.
Right.
And truth was no defense whatsoever. If you were charged, basically, if the Jewish lobby group charged you with it, then there was a foregone conclusion that you would just go through the whole process and you would be found convicted, and that was it. But there were two exceptions to that. To that whole scenario, and that was again two Jews, one by the name of Ezra Levant, who is now a host of his own television show with Sun News Media out of Toronto called Source, and another a Jewish writer by the name of Mark Stein, who I believe lives in the States, but he's a Canadian writer. And these two guys were actually charged with Section 13-1 by some Muslims who wanted to apply that same law to the Jews. Of course, Mark Stein was at that time was writing for McLean's magazine, which is one of the biggest magazines here in Canada, and they fought it, and Ezra Levant also fought it, and for some strange reason, neither one of them was convicted. Huh. And it all again had to do with the fact that they were both Zionist Jews, and they worked ways out of it. But it was also thanks to the Muslim people who filed those complaints, I think, that that was, the end result of that whole process was that the government finally repealed that law. And the only reason they repealed it, because it kind of flies in the face of everything else the Harper government has ever done. They're, you know, they're trying to impose more and more stringent laws like that. But I believe that the Jewish lobby realized that Section 13.1 was a double-edged sword, and it could be used not only against anybody that criticized Israel or criticized the Jews or Zionism, but it also could be used against, you know, people that criticized, you know, the Muslims and so on.
Right.
So that was why the government threw it out. And now they're just going with the one law that they have left, which is the one they're using against myself. And that, you know, and when you're charged with that, that means you know, you're faced with years of, of legal wrangling and lawyers and, you know, lots of costs. And it's just a long, drawn-out process. They, you know, because all they have to do is turn around and charge you, and then the state takes over and pays for all of the, you know, for the courts and everything to victimize you and,
right,
and that type of thing.
Yep.
So it's still an advantage for them, but it's also a good reason to get rid of those particular hate crime sections out of the criminal code. And that is something I forgot to mention, but that is basically the primary a reason that the Ontario Civil Liberties Association is supporting my cause, is because they also, and their main thrust of their proposal is to get rid of that hate propaganda section, get it removed from Canada's criminal code, and then that would free up all of Canada then to be able to express themselves. So since that's what makes it so important.
Well, exactly. That's the goal right there. Because I mean, what would you like to see as an outcome here? Is it basically, I would guess, fairness, right? When it comes to, there's no such thing as the right to criticize. It's just something that you do. We're human beings. We have opinion. We think things. We say things, right? But just a kind of a same association to criticizing anybody across the board, right? It's just a fairness that is sought here, and if that would be implied, you know, it would be a pretty easy way to go about these kinds of issues. Because now, as you said, they're like everyone is suing everybody. Everyone is offended by something. Everyone, you know, they read something online, and oh my God, you know, everything, the whole world collapses. We're spending all our time on these kinds of issues as opposed to really try to get somewhere with our lives. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's, you know, most of these issues would probably just be resolved in, you know, in the arena of public opinion if they were allowed to proceed through a process like that.
Right.
But when you stymie all of that, of course, when you have these so-called hate crime laws, because immediately, you know, it's almost like, immediately, if you criticize the Jews in any way, shape, or form, bingo, out comes the hate crime card that they've placed inside the criminal code, as a defense. And it then allows them not to debate issues. They never debate issues. They always resort to either, epithets or vilification or defamation of a person's character. They never, ever argue to any degree about their own actions and issues and try to justify them or anything. They never do that. It's par for the course. So if you're never going to openly debate why you behave the way you do, then you have to have some kind of a scapegoat. And for them, it's these hate crime laws.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. Now tell us more about the situation in Canada right now. We had the Ottawa shooting not too long ago. And of course, Harper, who's had a kind of a stranglehold on Canada for a long time now. I can't remember when there was another, I don't know if it's prime minister or it's a prime minister, right? And how has he tried to capitalize on this, and how do you think they're going to seek to change you know, kind of terrorism laws and what have you in Canada now due to this?
Well, these latest shootings in Ottawa, I think, are just another example of a government, you know, a Zionist occupied government working, you know, in collusion, you know, with Israel. You know, I believe, given the information that I've read so far, that there's a strong case for arguing that it was another false flag, no different than 9/11, really. And it's given the Harper government, justifiable reasons, you know, for continuing on and joining in with the United States and Israel and in this so-called war on terrorism, which is nothing but a Jewish construct or a Zionist construct, you know, designed to, you know, to basically take over the whole Middle East and all their resources and so on and so forth. And there's just too many unanswered questions about the shooting. I was just reading an article last night written by a friend of mine, Professor Anthony Hall out of Lethbridge University in Alberta. He wrote a very in-depth analysis of the shooting that was published on Veterans Today, and he brings up some interesting situations, especially with respect to the young fellow that supposedly, you know, shot the soldier who was guarding the war memorial and then ran into the parliament buildings and was going to, you know, whoever he was going to shoot there, this type of thing. It turns out that this guy, you know, the way the media has blown up the story and even the photographs and so on are all suspect. And it turns out that this supposed homeless fellow who was hooked on crack and disenchanted and had all kinds of problems, it turns out that his mother is the number one head of the Federal Immigration Department here in Canada, and a very, you know, one would consider to be almost like within the inner circle, you know, of Prime Minister Harper's, small group of, Zionist sycophants, you know, and you have to question, you know, something like that when the media doesn't, when the media blows it up and tries to twist everything around and fit it all into their preconceived notions of Muslim terrorists and ISIS and so on and so forth. It seems to me, based on all the other false flag events that I have studied over the years, going right back to the Lusitania and Pearl Harbor and on to, other events leading up to 9/11 and so on, it just seems to fall into place with those, eh? And there's just too many unanswered questions. And, of course, they all somehow inevitably fall into the overall scheme of the Zionist, basically their global agenda.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Now, is it going to change anything more drastically? I mean, I don't know how severely they've taken this situation. There's been a number of these, as you said before, but they always tried to capitalize, on these kinds of events and kind of spin it. Not only politically, but legally in terms of what they can do and whatnot. But it's really about ramping up, I feel, in a way, the tensions between, the West and Islam or Muslims specifically. And it's almost like we can almost see that there is something on the horizon here, specifically when we take, ISIS and ISIL and all these kinds of things into account, that they're almost seeking a Western and European co-intervention into the Middle East of trying to deal with these problems. I mean, that's already happening, but I'm even talking on a bigger scale. What do you make of that, Arthur?
Well, I would have to agree with you, you know, because this whole ISIS thing as is a creation, you know, of the, you know, the CIA and the Mossad and, you know, any other affiliated organizations. You know, it's, you know, ISIS is not something, you know, it's not a nation in itself. It's just an organization like the so-called Al-Qaeda was prior to that. It's a creation, basically. I would say it's just another creation of the Jewish think tanks, you know, that have created all the other previous, you know from the justifications for 9/11 and for going in and destroying Iraq and so on. It's just another example of creating scenarios that will then allow Israel to fulfill its own, you know, agenda. And it's, you know, unfortunate that, you know, the Harper government, and they've been basically in power now since 2006, you know, they made it into power under, you know, there's a lot of controversy around how they did. And even when they did get elected in 2011, they were only basically, I believe it was around 33% of the voting population that actually voted for the conservative government. Yet, because of the nature of how, you know, the political process works here, they were able to get a majority, and ever since they have, you know, and I had written articles prior to that last election warning Canadians of what would happen, you know, if Harper ever did get a majority government. And of course it's he's gone beyond any expectations, you know, in terms of, you know, dragging Canada further and further into all of the ugliness and the war and the injustice, you know, that Israel has been involved in ever since, well, even prior to 1948, but ever since the creation of the State of Israel, you know, and now he's dragging us further down into those depths, you know, of basically despair, you know, and using, and of course this latest incident, you know, and like 9/11, you know, there were anti-terrorist, you know, what do you call them? You know, when they go in and they sort of set the stage for it and pretend that it's going to
a drill.
You know, that, yeah, like drills. You know, there were drills going on at the same time, you know, that this was happening. And I really highly recommend, you know, that for readers to check out that article by Tony Hall, because he explains in detail, you know, what was leading up to that incident there, you know. And of course he also explains in detail the whole rise of Harper and the effect it's had upon Canada, you know, in terms of, you know, the reduction in our rights and liberties and freedoms and so on and so forth. And,
Yeah, very, very good. The article is called Harper, the Ottawa Shooter and Selling of War. I'll have that linked up as well. So you guys can check that out easily from there. Now, a difficult question here for you, of course, but what do you think is our way out of this situation that we've allowed ourselves to get into, really? Because I can't really see it any other way. Sure, there's a lot of manipulation. There's a lot of things along the way that people have fallen for and whatnot. But it's really, at the end of it, I think it's because people haven't spoken up soon enough. They're afraid of being called names. They're afraid of being called, you know, as you said, they're a racist or a Nazi or some, you know, crazy kook, just because the fact that they are recognizing that there are foreign interests in their own government, that they're recognizing that, you know, a lot of the things that goes on the world stage is, you know, largely about Middle Eastern politics and everything else. But when it comes to, you know, getting out of that situation and specifically focus on the Western governments here in Canada, you know, Europe and America, How do we crack this nut, you know, how do we break this open and let more people know about this stuff and begin to turn in a, you know, better direction politically, Arthur?
Well, that's a tough question, Henrik, because it all goes back to, you know, teaching people about what the truth is in terms of how our governments are set up, who runs the show, who owns our media, who owns and basically controls our whole information systems that we depend on, you know, in order to think properly, you know, and in order to think properly and in order to have a proper understanding of history and so on, which then gives us a perspective, you know, that we can act on and act on, you know, so that our actions are just and based on truth and so on. We have to have the correct information, and without that, people are never going to, you know, never going to figure out what's really going on, and so they get caught in this, I don't know whether you call it cognitive dissonance or whatever. They get confused, and they get lost, and they get sidetracked into all kinds of side issues and so on, and people can never kind of get together on the same page, and especially here in Canada, when it comes to getting together politically onto the same page, you're then confronted with who are you going to vote for in a federal election? What government party are you going to vote for who will further the aims that you would like to see, and who will basically facilitate a greater understanding for the Canadian people? And what you find is that every federal government party, they've all been co-opted by the Zionists. So it's a really tough question to answer. You've got to have, you know, if you want to do things peacefully, and you want to change things peacefully, you basically have to do it, you know, using the democratic system and the process that is set in place. You have to have a government party that will, you know, go through the stages that you have to go through to gain power and then make those changes. But without the information, the correct information, and without knowing what the original causes of our dilemmas are, all you're left with is, you know, basically spreading more and more around the net and through conversations and through whatever manners and ways you have, spreading the truth about who is the problem and what the problem is, and allowing, you know, people to kind of eventually work it out, and then at some point, hopefully, organizing and then changing things that way. Other than that, I can't see any opportunity for peaceful change to take place, and I'm opposed to any form of violent revolution. Because yep. Throughout history, every violent revolution has been fomented by the Jews, and they've been the only ones who've ever benefited from violent revolutions. We saw that in France, we saw that in Russia, we saw that in China, and so on and so forth. So it's a tough dilemma that truth seekers face, because they know that they have to, they know that changes are necessary, but at the same time, they don't want to go the same route that they've done in the past and end up, you know, two steps back instead of one step ahead. And, yeah. And so we're only left with one alternative, and that is to keep on spreading the truth about what's going on until, you know, we've reached that 100th monkey stage where enough people finally realize it, that they're willing to then lay aside all their fears and so on about being, you know, called an anti-Semite or a hate monger or a racist or whatever, And then they can start to make those changes on a political level without any fear of being, you know, being called names and so on and so forth.
Well, yeah, exactly. I see what you're saying. Obviously, it's a saturation point. I think also it has to do with the more people are kind of moved out of their comfort zone to a certain extent when they realize that there are clear and tangible threats to them in terms of peace. I mean, we have destabilization on every level in all corners of the world right now. And this is, you know, due to the fact that people haven't spoken up soon enough and they've said no to this and they've not agreed to do all these things. So obviously information, as you say, and education, that's really the core of it. And then also offering an alternative to the media that we have out there right now, which we do to a large extent. But I think also it's, and I've said this many times, and I don't mean to be repetitive and all that, but I feel it's a cultural core issue that we've kind of lost our, you know, connectivity to who we are and where we come from, Arthur. It's kind of a, you know, we don't, you know, tell our own stories of our people anymore. It's been a very anti kind of, nationalistic sentiments. It's been all about globalism. It's been all about creating this kind of rootless human beings where there's no real connectivity with our past. And I feel that when human beings turn their backs on our own history and turn our backs on our own heritage and our own culture, our own ancestors, really, we tend to lose the grip on those aspects. And we say, we don't care about that anymore. It all becomes about, temporary pleasures. And we all just either we just want to get some money out of the situation, or we just want to, people are generally pretty lazy and there's no like big cause for them to be protective of what they have anymore. But I feel anyway personally that the more this is being challenged and threatened, there's kind of a reawakening of that taking place, and people realize that what they once had is something that they're losing, and there's a lot of uncertainty in the world and a lot of conflicts on so many different level. So I think to be able to take back and take charge of our own identity to a certain extent again is really important as an equation in all of this, and begin to share our own stories again, talk about our own people, and feel pride of who we are, right? And feel a sense of accomplishment, of achievement. I mean, I'm seeing so much kind of hatred turned towards the Europeans now, really, wherever they are in the world, be they Americans or in Canada or in Europe, Australia, New Zealand. And you have this kind of really big guilt complex involved in this, that we have to, in some capacity, kind of, cater to everyone else, and we don't have the right to have our own interests anymore. That's what I'm seeing anyway.
Yes, that's totally right. I mean, that was the whole intent of this multicultural initiative, by the Zionists to begin with, was to kind of try to dilute down everybody else's culture and heritage, and turn it into take all them beautiful colors of the rainbow and mix them all together into a nice, dirty, muddy color, where nobody can identify with anything, and then get it, and then use that, to then get everybody fighting amongst each other, of course, to the advantage of the Zionist agenda. And it's true. I mean, here in Canada, for example, and it's probably the only example so far that I really am aware of where a group of people are doing just that, and they've been struggling and for probably quite a few decades, maybe all throughout even the last century, and that are the native people here in Canada. They were decimated by the invasion of the Europeans back at, when they came over, and were treated roughly for decades and decades and decades. But in the last, I would say the last 30 or 40 years, you've seen a really strong turn, on the part of the native people to re-identify with their former cultural roots, and to basically, they have a really strong ethic when it comes to defending, their treaty rights, defending their water and the land and so on, and standing up, you know, for basic injustices that they've been subject, you know, injustices that they've been subjected to for way too long. And they're a good example to others in Canada too, you know, to European cultures and so on, to do the same thing, you know. But over the last 50, 60, 70 years, you know, a generation after generation of Canadians have been, you know, we've all been mind controlled through this whole multicultural BS system, you know,
yeah.
To, you know, just to basically, you know, that little cartoon that has been on the net for quite some time is a perfect example of it. You know, it's a little white guy and a little black guy, and they're, you know, kids, and the little black guy is standing there saying, "I'm black, I'm proud," you know, and the little white guy says, "Yeah, I'm white, I'm proud," and the little black guy says, racist,
yeah.
You know,
right.
Right away, you know, and it's, yeah. Just, that's exactly what it is. It's you know, some, you know, if you're black or, you know, a member of some other racial group, it's okay. You know, but soon as, you know, if you happen to be European and white and you say, "Well, I'm proud to be white," right away, you know, in comes the whole, you know, the whole racist card, you know, again. And that all has been planted in our minds, you know,
yeah.
Through generation and generation of mind control via the Zionist media, you know, and that has to be overcome somehow. And people are starting, you know, now, you know, because of the freedom that the internet allows us, people are starting to be able to identify and group together. And, you know, you see it on Facebook a lot. You know, there's so many groups on Facebook, you know, that are promoting, you know, they're either promoting, whatever culture and whatever racial group they're from. You know, there's, you know, and these are, you know, other than the traditional ones that have been doing that, you know, for years, it is growing, and it's a good thing, because you know, there's, like I say, there's more than one color in the spectrum, you know, and they all deserve equal respect and attention.
Yeah, well, I agree. I think it's fairly simple, right? We should all have the ability to feel this, you know, pride. And of course, so many people have been, you know, displaced. But yet it's a very, very kind of a one-sided view right now. And white guilt and white privilege, and I mean, Hollywood and entertainment, TV, it's just absolutely full of it right now. And it's unfortunately programming a lot of people. That's why I feel it's important to you know, to talk about that and show how it's being used towards against people. But it's just such an incredible attack, really, when you begin to examine it and look at it in greater detail. And it's also, again, it's that case of, is it a double standard or not? If we reverse the scenarios, would people still think it would be okay? That's always fun to do that kind of test, because I feel, anyway, when I look at some of these TV shows and movies, that even in the wildest conception that people might have had of how, let's say, you know, European culture treated other cultures on their own television, let's say, you know, 50 years ago or something like that, even in their wildest dreams, it's not as severe as it is today in the terms of the you know, putting down, you know, white people and Europeans and everything else in that regard. And it's just it's a double standard, and that's the most important thing to point out, that that they're trying so hard. But I think it's kind of, they're running on overkill a little bit too, because the more they're pushing this, Arthur, the more our people are waking up to it, and they realize, like, hey, wait a minute, why am I being singled out here? Why am I being charged for something which I've, you know, nothing to do with? Or even, I mean, there's a basic thing that's just due to, you know, who I am and my skin color. Now all of a sudden I have all this, you know, privilege, and I'm supposed to feel guilty for who I am. I feel the more that they push those kinds of things, the more people will wake up to that and actually realize and see that there is an agenda coming out of Hollywood. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I totally agree, and you know, part and parcel of all of that is all the you know, the anti-German, anti-Hitler, anti-Nazi movies that they keep on, you know, and the Holocaust movies they keep on, you know, regurgitating over and over and over and over and over. It all plays in to that anti-white, anti-European, you know, scenario that they're creating, you know. And rightfully so. I don't think it's going to have the effect. You know, I think that the more they keep on trying those outworn methods, the greater, you know, it's going, the reaction is going to be against it. You know, just like this whole business of, you know, calling people, you know, an anti-Semite. You know, that worked really well throughout the 20th century and even into the beginning of the 21st century. But it's been so overused now, and, you know, that, you know, more and more people, you know, could care less whether they're called that any longer, right? Because they realize it's just another term coined by the Zionist Jews, you know, in order for them to gain advantage and you know, get people to shut up and not speak the truth about what those guys are up to.
Yeah, you know, when did we ever see a film about Stalin's mass murder? You know, I think it's been one made from 1992. I downloaded it. It was pretty okay, but it's like one of the only ones I've seen. Or, you know, the Armenian genocide of people, or even the plagues that have taken place in Europe or what have you. There's so much of that. But that's just more proof that we don't have control of our own culture, basically. And it's the dialogue, the framework, you know, around of what shapes our awareness of the world is not controlled by ourselves and our own interests, and that's why this situation is so volatile. But Arthur, let us know if there's anything else about the case now that we should know, maybe something that we've left out, something you want to bring to the attention of our audience here, even if it's something upcoming or what have you. Anything major that we've left out so far?
Not that I can think of, other than, you know, I would like to encourage, you know, your listeners to check out the information on the website dealing with that case. I have, like I say, on my home page, I have a thing right out in the very top next to my home button on the menu, Regina versus Radical Press legal updates, if one looks through that, you can get an idea of how that whole case has unfolded over the last couple of years or more, and it also gives you a good idea of what you know, what the repercussions of that case will be for, you know, for Canada as a whole if the lobby is successful in, you know, in prosecuting me on this and getting a guilty charge on this case. But I think it's important, you know, as far as the case goes, that, you know, it's very important that other Canadian organizations pick up on it and start giving it more publicity, like the Ontario Civil Liberties Association has done. They've done a commendable job of doing that, and I'm, like I say, I'm hoping, you know, there's other associations across Canada, you know, who will join in with that. And I have done a number of radio interviews on this subject, you know, with various stations in the States and so on, and those, you know, that coverage is helping the case as well too. And I think the more that it's mentioned and the more people become aware of it, the more they're going to also become aware of just how serious this issue is with, as far as, you know, controlling our ability to express ourselves, you know, and getting the truth out there. That is going to be the ultimate objective of all of the work that I've been doing and the reason I've been fighting this issue for so long, you know, because we have to be able to tell our stories, you know, from based on the information that we've been able to glean from our own researches and so on and so forth, and just from our observations of global events as we see them now, you know, we have to be able to question, as the old expression goes, we have to question the authority of those who tell us, you know, the way that things are a certain way, you know, when in actual reality they're not. They're just the opposite. So it's important that the case get as much recognition as possible, and hopefully that will help, you know, in the process of doing that, it will help others realize that, the importance of freedom of expression here in Canada, but the same applies in any other country in the world where these types of laws are in place, and there's too many other countries already who are being negatively affected, you know, by these same processes that are taking place here in Canada.
Well, exactly. It's very important to recognize how it could lead to, you know, further censorship and specifically incursions on the web and everything else. And of course, you're very brave for doing, you know, what you're doing. And I think that people doesn't even necessarily have to agree with you to recognize that, you know, investigation into, you know, any topic is vital, and the freedom of speech and the freedom to, you know, write about those things. That's the core issue here, and that's what is important. Otherwise, you know, we're on that slippery slope again, so it's very, very important. Now, obviously, I hope the case goes well as well, and please keep up the good work, Arthur, and let us know how things go here ahead, and please let us know if you want to come back if and when there are any updates here, because it's very important to do that. So let me just give out the website here once more, radicalpress.com, and also, of course, please help out there with the Arthur Topham Legal Defense Fund. There are links right there from the front page where you can take a look at there. And of course, I hope you can help out there in that capacity as well. Well, with that, Arthur, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for sharing your story with us, and good luck in the future.
Thank you, Henrik, for having me on your show. I truly appreciate it, and I'm thankful that I was able to speak out on the issues here.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. An important case here that Arthur Topham is part of. We'll keep you posted on developments, and I hope that a lot of you and others understand the importance of cases like this and can be of help and support so that you know, we don't lose our freedom of speech and freedom of the press. Upcoming on the program, we have Daniel Hammarberg, also Jason Erb, Neil Kramer, Carlos Morales, and Lawrence Eastman. Have a great rest of your day or evening, and we'll be back in just a few. Much more is to come. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great day. Bye-bye.